The following is a paid program. 1590 WAKR and its owners, the Rubber City Radio Group, are not responsible for its content.
Money Talks, the show that gives you the tools to navigate a challenging economy, help you build and protect your wealth, and provide timely news and information to manage your money. Here's the host of Money Talks, Richard Peterson, president of Capital Financial Group on 1590 WAKR.
Well, good morning, everyone. I am your host, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. This is Money Talks, and thanks for joining us on this Saturday morning, the 25th day of February, as we round out the month here. And we see the markets that ended up on a positive note yesterday, squeaking out a positive return just in the last few minutes of trading yesterday, which was kind of exciting to watch, as the markets were basically down most of the day. Now, not by much, but they were down. I think the Dow was down at 1.71 points. And this makes a record, well, not a record, but this makes 11 consecutive days that the Dow has made a new record high. Now, don't get overly excited. I mean, these have been small gains every day. To move forward, the Dow was up 11 points yesterday, close to 20,821. Now, that makes it positive 5.4% for the year. Like I said, it's been 11 straight days of record highs, but they've just been small fractions of a percentage each day. And the NASDAQ was up just under 10 points yesterday, close at 5845. It's positive 8.6% for the year. The S&P 500, well, it was up 3.5 points, close to 2367. We also saw the other markets, natural gas was up a penny to $2.63. In the oil market, the West Texas Intermediate was down 46 cents, closed at $53.99 a barrel, while Brent crude was down 59 cents, closed at $55.99 a barrel. Gas futures were down a penny, closed at $1.51. And at the pumps, we see in the area anywhere from $1.97 to $2.25 a gallon for regular unleaded. Gold up $6.90, closed to $1,258.30 an ounce, while silver was up 22 cents, closed at $18.41 an ounce. The VIX, the volatility index measure, was down 24 cents, closed at 11.47. And in the bond market, we see the 2-year now is at 1.14. The 10-year down to 2.31, and the 30-year back under 3% at 2.95. We saw on the U.S. economic front, the Labor Department report released a report showing a modest increase in initial jobless claims. They rose 6,000 to 244,000. We also saw that existing home sales surged up by 3.3% to an annual rate of 5.69 million in January, after falling 1.6% in December. With the bigger than expected increase, existing home sales climbed to their highest level since reaching 5.79 million in February 10 years ago in 2007. The Conference Board said its leading economic index climbed by 0.6% in January after rising 8.5% in December. It's amazing to see what's going on out there in the investment world and the economy, and with the new government, still a lot of those animal spirits out there in the markets, as we see hope for, you know, corporate tax reform, individual tax reform, reducing of a lot of the regulations that have been put on the businesses and so forth. I've got an article here by Porter Stansberry, which was quite interesting. There's a couple of different areas here that we're going to hit. And this is just, you know, for your information. I always like to share some of these things that we find. He says that the benchmark S&P 500 rose 1.8% in January and is up nearly 4% so far this month in February. According to equity research firm CFRA, this is an incredibly bullish sign. The firm notes that since 1945, stocks have risen in both January and February just 27 times. And in every one of those years, 27 out of 27, the market has ended the year in the green for an average total return of 24%. Now, that's an impressive streak. Of course, nothing can guarantee that the streak will continue. And as always, they would never recommend making investment decisions based on only one indicator alone. But history strongly suggests the bull market has further to run. However, he says, history is far less bullish about bonds. The recent rally in stocks has been accompanied by a tightening in the credit spreads. That's the difference between the yield of the U.S. corporate debt and U.S. treasuries, but also a decline in real interest rates. Now, according to strategist at Bank of America Merrill Lynch, stocks and credit spreads are reflecting optimism about the economic growth and corporate fundamentals, yet falling real rates are reflecting the opposite. A Bloomberg report yesterday said that this is unusual. The last time that we saw this confluence of events was right before the bond market routes in 2013 and 2015, the so-called taper tantrum and bun tantrum. The S&P 500 index surged Tuesday to reach the average year-end target of Wall Street analysts with a 5.5% gain since December. The extra yield investors' demand to hold corporate bonds instead of treasuries is near the lowest in 2 years, and the yield on five-year inflation-protected treasuries has dipped back into negative territory. Eventually, this disconnect becomes wide enough to trigger a real rate catch-up. History offers a compelling reason to be cautious on duration after recent market moves. In other words, history suggests that real interest rates could quickly move higher from here, meaning longer duration debt like long-dated U.S. Treasury bonds could plunge in value. Speaking of optimism, the report goes on, new data shows U.S. business leaders haven't been this hopeful in years. According to JPM's annual Business Leaders Outlook survey of mid-sized companies, a remarkable 80% of executives are optimistic about business and the U.S. economy today. This is the highest level in the history of the survey and a dramatic improvement from last year's 39% figure. In addition, 71% said they plan to increase compensation this year, and nearly 60% said that they plan to add more full-time employees. As you might guess, most cited the recent election for their change in their outlook. More than three-quarters of executives say they expect the policies of President Donald Trump and a Republican-led Congress to have a positive impact on their business. The reason? An agenda that's pro-business and includes tax reform and less regulation. U.S. companies are gaining confidence, and they anticipate new economic support from Washington in the coming year. Even some of the top business challenges, which are managing labor costs and trying to tap a limited supply of talent, are more growing pains than survival tactics. A separate survey of small businesses showed a similar but more modest improvement, 62%, are optimistic today versus 43% last year, and that's according to Bloomberg. So basically what you're finding that the business leaders are more optimistic about their business prospects. They're likely to increase spending via hiring, wage increases, and office equipment upgrades. Well, that would bode well for multiple industry groups as that optimism snowballs and starts to show up in the numbers. So basically what we're finding at this point is that in the business world, there is great optimism. In the investment world, there is great optimism. And what we've seen so far since the election is a market that has the momentum to the upside and very little reason to go down. Now, certainly, The one caveat to be aware of is things could change if we start to see some of these promises not coming to fruition or maybe being pushed off further, maybe into next year or so forth. Without really trying to get much into politics at this point, I still am very disappointed in what the Democrats are trying to do when they're slow walking all of these cabinet appointments and so forth of the presidents. He still doesn't have a full cabinet. And, of course, people want to say, you know, this is the slowest moving cabinet and how many years slowest moving administration. Well, it's not their fault. It's the Democrats. And I get really upset with all politicians when they're supposed to be about taking care of us, the Americans, instead of their own party and their own personal political gain. Shame on all of them at this point. But certainly the optimism is out there at this point. We would like to have our clients involved in the market gains at this point. If there is a pullback, and there will be a pullback, it is nothing more than a normal repricing of risk out there. It is not because of any type of economic frailty or problems at this point around the world. All things are looking fairly good. They really haven't looked this good in probably 10 years or more. So it's a nice period of time to be in. Enjoy it. All things do come to an end. Bad things come to an end. Good things come to an end. But right now, it's a good time. And certainly, you don't have to sit back and be worrying about your portfolio dumping like we did in 2007 and 8. So I'd like to pass on the good news. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the new laws that have taken place over the few years here in regards to capital gains, particularly on your home. So stay with us. You're listening to Money Talks here, WAKR. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-5090. With more of Money Talks on 5090 WAKR.
And we welcome you back. Homeowners already know that many tax breaks that Uncle Sam offers, most notably the mortgage, interest, and property tax deductions. Well, he also has good news for home sellers. Most of them won't owe the IRS a single dime. When you sell your primary residence, you can make up to $250,000 in profit if you're a single owner, twice that if you're married, and not owe any capital gains taxes. Now, most people are not going to have a tax obligation unless their gain is huge. What is capital gains tax? Well, capital gains tax is a tax imposed on profit resulting from the sale of an investment. For example, capital gains are commonly realized after the sale of stocks and property. To calculate the capital gain, subtract the purchase price from the sale price. Now, some sellers are surprised by this break, especially if they've been in their homes for a while. That's because before May 1997, the only way you could avoid paying taxes on your home sale profit was to use the money to buy another, more expensive house within 2 years. Sellers age 55 or older had one other option. They could take a once-in-a-lifetime tax exemption of up to $125,000 in profits. And in all instances, there was Form 2119 to fill out to show that you had followed the rules. But when the Taxpayer Relief Act of 1997 became law, the home sales tax burden eased for millions of residential taxpayers. The rollover or once-in-a-lifetime options were replaced with the current per-sale exclusion amounts. There is some logic to this law change because most people under the prior rules didn't recognize a taxable gain because they rolled it over into another residence. The change essentially made it easier to dispose of your residence. Still, some requirements to meet. If you used pre-1997 rules for residential sales, don't worry. That doesn't disqualify you from claiming the exclusion on any residential sales now. The law change applies to all sales since it took effect. Another bonus to the change rules, you don't have to buy another home with your sale proceeds. You can squander the money any way you like. Even better, there's no limit on the number of times that you can use the home sale exemption. In most cases, you can make tax-free profits of $250,000 or $500,000, depending on your filing status, every time you sell a home. There are a few rules to follow, of course. First, the property you're selling must be your principal residence. That means you live in it. This tax break doesn't apply to a house or other property that you have solely for investment purposes. In those cases, the usual capital gains rules apply. You must live in that principal residence for 2 of the 5 years before you sell it. This is known as the use test. It also means, practically speaking, that each sale must be at least 2 years apart. That still leaves you room to make some money on several properties. You can sell your residence this year, pocket any gain within the tax limits, and buy a new residence. Then 2 years later, you can do the same thing again, and again, and again, every 2 years. And you no longer have to worry about that pesky prior law reporting requirement. When your gain doesn't exceed the limit, you don't have to file anything with the IRS. Now, second home sales take a tax hit. Owners of multiple homes, however, will now find it's not as easy to shelter sale profit as it used to be. A provision of the Housing Assistance Act of 2008, the bill designed primarily to provide relief to some homeowners facing foreclosure, could cost the owners of a vacation or other type of second property when they sell. Previously, you could move into the second property, make it your primary residence, live there for 2 years, and then sell it and pocket most or all the profit. Now, however, even if you convert a second piece of real estate to your primary home, you'll owe tax on part of the sale money based on how long the house was used as a second rather than your main residence. And special rules for married couples: while spouses get double the exclusion of single home sellers, couples also have some additional considerations when it comes to determining whether their sale is tax-free. Either spouse can meet the ownership test. For example, the IRS says it's okay if you own the home for the past 2 years, but you just added your new spouse to the title when you got married 6 months ago. Well, since you own the residence for the requisite time as joint filers, you have no problem meeting the ownership test, even though your spouse wasn't an official owner for that long. So now you know about the nice tax relief you get on your homes, $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 as a couple. No forms to fill out. You can do it every 2 years. They've made it very simple to profit and not have to be taxed on the capital gains of a residence. So there you have it. Hopefully it can be used by some of our listeners that can profit. Maybe you've been thinking about moving. Well, moving from a bigger house to a smaller house or condo, for example, you can literally sell the house, not have to pay any capital gains, start the 2-year clock on your new residence. And so there you have it. And when we return, it will be time for the Money Talks Joke of the Week. So stay with us, and we'll be right back after these few commercial breaks.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590. With more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back. It's that time for the Money Talks Joke of the Week. And this week, Frank, an up-and-coming lawyer, was opening his new office. As he sat there wondering where to put the pencil holder, a fellow walked through the door. Well, Frank, wanting to look busy, so he picked up the phone and pretended to be talking to a client. He motioned to the man to come into his office and to hold on a moment. "Yes, I can see you about your will," Frank said on the phone. "No, I can't see you this week, but perhaps next Thursday." "No, not in the morning. 2:30 is the only time I have left." "Yes, 2:30 would be fine. I'll see you then." Frank hung up the phone, made a note in his planner, and turned to the fellow standing in front of his desk. "Now, sir, what can I do for you?" he said.
Nothing, the man said. "I'm just here to install that phone."
Okay. That's one way to look busy. Anyway, you know, one of the things that we've talked about on the show, and something I want to put a little more emphasis on here, has to do with variable annuities. Now, I know there's a number of you out there that have variable annuities, and I really want to give some information and make a case about variable annuities. To start off, I am not in favor of the variable annuity as a general annuity itself, as an investment. Most of the variable annuities out there are very, very high in fees. They come with a high commission that is paid to a broker, and then there's an annual fee that is also commissioned to the broker. With a variable annuity, you, the policyholder, assume all of the risk. When you take into account the high percentage in fees, which are generally in the 3 to 4% range, you're taking an awful lot of risk with a investment product that benefits the companies that sell them. Susie Orman, Herbundo Cruz, Scott Burns, I mean, you can talk to them all, and they have nothing good to say about variable annuities. Now, they're sold to you under the premise of, here's a way that you can get, for example, tax-deferred growth in an investment product that basically they're mutual funds inside of it. They're called separate accounts, but they're basically like mutual funds. So you can be involved in the market, get tax-deferred growth. Okay, that's a nice concept, and I like that. But the fact of the matter is, when you take into account the heavy fees that are imposed upon you, the returns over time can look a little dismal. Now, certainly with the markets doing well now, and you get your quarterly reports, if things continue, they're going to look pretty solid. Nice, I understand. But over time, one of the biggest charges inside of these is called the mortality expense charge, which is about the highest expense of most costly life insurance that you'll ever buy in your life. It basically guarantees you that the amount of money that you deposited, should death occur and the balance is below that, well, they'll make sure that the beneficiary gets the at least what you put into the contract. It's generally a 1% plus fee, as high as 1.5% for something you'll probably statistically never use. But it is a very good, it's a very good fee for the company that sells it. And that's the reason that they sell them. Now, for your information, there are a couple of variable annuities out there that do not have the mortality and expense charges. They don't have all the option charges that these brokers will put onto the contracts for you and everything else. They're basically a structured variable annuity, which means that
Yes, you're able to invest in the markets. Yes, you're able to get tax-deferred growth. Yes, you get all the benefits of an annuity, but you don't have the high fees that are involved in those. And for some people, these can be a good tool inside of your portfolio. But for many others, especially for most of our listeners and the type of people we work with when it, you know, they're close to retirement or they're already retired, fixed annuities, regular fixed annuities, fixed indexed annuities, some of the other types of hybrid fixed annuities, these are going to be much more useful for your portfolio. First of all, they safeguard and protect your principal against any type of losses. So even if the market were to fall 50%, well, you're not going to lose anything inside of your fixed annuity. With the variable annuity, you do take that hit. Plus, you get hit with the fees on top of it. Here's an example. Let's say that you have, and I'll go on the low end. Let's say that you have a 3% fee. Well, if the markets go up 3% and you have a 3% fee, you're going to see very, very minimal, if any, growth at all. If the markets go up 6%, you'll see roughly about a 3% gain because of the fees that are involved. And if the market were to fall 5%, well, you're probably going to see somewhere more in the ballpark of an 8% drop because of the fees that are incurred each and every year. So as you can see, this is kind of like a Las Vegas game where the odds are against you. So therefore, again, variable annuities are not something that we like or recommend. There are a couple out there that we have access to that do not have those type of fees in there because there's no commissions, there's no fees, M&E charge fees or anything else. They're just basically straight annuities that have access to the separate accounts or the mutual funds that are inside of them. But the fixed annuities are something that are used quite frequently, and they do give a protection, and they do move your entire portfolio more towards a conservative nature because of the fact that there's no risk. I should say that there's no market risk inside of the fixed annuities. We've talked before, every financial decision that you make out there incurs some sort of risk, no matter what that is. And you just have to be aware of what they are and say, I can live with that. And for example, what I mean by that is if you put your money into a savings account today, there's no risk that you're going to lose your money, but there is interest rate risk. There is inflation risk because you're getting paid such a paltry interest rate return that you could have put it somewhere else to get a higher interest rate. You in the savings account are going to be losing ground because of inflation risk. These are the types of risks that I'm talking about. There's risk with every decision that involves money. You just have to understand what those risks are. Back to variable annuities, no good. I have really racked my head for many, many years trying to figure out if there's any advantage to owning a typical variable annuity. And to be honest with you, I really can't find any type of benefit to owning a variable annuity out there. If you're invested straight in mutual funds without the cloak of an annuity, you're going to get better returns over time. And if you do it correctly, you're going to find that you're, even when it comes time for taxes, you could really make out over the long term. So I'm not a fan of variable annuities. And anybody that has one and would like to discuss it, we're certainly open to that. I just think that they're a very expensive product that the brokerage houses have put out on the market, and they use it for that revenue stream. That's what they're there for. Anyway, it's time to get on the phone lines for the Money Talks Quiz of the Week, 330-370-1590. I'm going to ask you three multiple choice questions. And, of course, for being our contestant, You're going to win breakfast at Bob Evans. If you get all three questions correct, we'll move you into the bonus round for one additional question. If you get that one correct, you'll win a second breakfast at Bob Evans. 330-370-1590. We're going to take caller number 4, and we'll be right back after these commercial breaks.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590 with more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back. It's time for the Money Talks Quiz of the Week, and it looks like we have Joseph of Akron on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
Excellent, excellent.
Do you prefer I call you Joseph or Joe?
Joe's fine. Joe.
Joe's fine. Okay, Joe. Got a couple questions for you today. And my first question, the Dow Jones Industrial closed up yesterday for the what day in a row?
11th.
I don't even have to give you the answers. Absolutely correct. 11th day in a row for the Dow Jones. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the last time that happened was back in 1973. So it's been quite a while since that's happened. My next question for you. One Mexican peso equals how much in the U.S. currency? Does it equal a nickel, 50 cents, or $5?
A nickel.
You're absolutely correct. A nickel. And my last question for you is, which cost more today, an ounce of gold, an ounce of platinum, or an ounce of palladium? Which costs more today, an ounce of gold, an ounce of platinum, or an ounce of palladium?
Palladium.
Oh, so close, Joe.
Platinum.
Palladium, palladium's going for $7.71 an ounce. Platinum closed at $1,027 an ounce, and gold is $1,258 an ounce. Usually, that's not. Usually, platinum has been higher than gold, but of recent, gold has been higher than platinum. Certainly, that's where we sit. Hey, nice shot, though. I mean, 2 out of 3. Got close on that last one there. Not bad at all, Joe. Not bad at all.
Thank you.
And we're going to send you out, of course, your card for breakfast at Bob Evan. And I want to thank you for calling in and being our contestant today.
Okay. It's always a pleasure.
You have a good weekend now.
Great show, too.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Ah, nicely done, Joe. 2 out of 3. And... one of the things I wanted to cover today also is, this was an article that I came across, 8 reasons to work in retirement. You know, now some people work in retirement because they need money to pay their bills, but most working retirees enjoy a variety of other benefits, including opportunities to socialize, a reason to stay mentally and physically active, and a chance to feel like a vital part of a community or organization. According to a Merrill Lynch and AgeWave survey of 4,854 people, here's a look at why working retirees stay on the job. Mental engagement. Whether it's making a sale or writing a report, a job often provides opportunities to keep your mind active and engaged. The majority of working retirees, 62%, say that staying mentally active is a major reason that they continue to work. Physical activity. Without a job to go to every day, you might find yourself increasingly sitting around at home and watching TV. Most jobs require you to get dressed and commute to the office, and some positions come with additional physical activity. Almost half, or 46%, of retirees who work say that they appreciate the physical activity working provides. Social connections. Retirees aren't typically invited to business lunches
or important meetings. Seniors might begin to feel lonely once they don't have colleagues or clients to chat with. Some retirees, 42%, keep working for the friendships and social connections a job provides. An identity. A job can become a part of your identity that helps to define your role in your community. Those who leave absorbing professional careers can feel like they have lost their sense of purpose in retirement. Just over a third, 36% of retirees say continuing to work gives them a way to contribute to society that enhances their feelings of self-worth. Some retirees choose to give back by teaching or working at a nonprofit organization. Money. While it's nice to have some extra money coming in during retirement, only about a third of working retirees identify a paycheck as one of their primary reasons for remaining employed. While a job is necessary for some retirees to pay their bills, most older workers say that they appreciate the income, but it isn't essential to get by with. Many older employees work in retirement in order to give their nest egg more time to grow and earn fund money for discretionary purposes, and a few people say working in retirement will help them to leave a better legacy to their heirs or charities. New challenges. Once you've been retired for a few years, it can start to get a little boring. Some 30% of those surveyed say that they work in retirement because it provides them with new challenges. Some retirees enter a new line of work or become self-employed. A job often requires you to set goals and to make a plan to achieve them, which can give you the motivation to acquire new skills and put them into practice. At many jobs, there's also a celebration when goals are accomplished. Health insurance. Medicare coverage doesn't kick in until age 65, so if you retire before 65, you will need to purchase health insurance through your state's health insurance exchange or find coverage from another source. Some people in their early 60s continue to work to maintain eligibility for employer-sponsored health insurance. A more relaxed schedule. While many retirees plan to continue to work, only 5% of the survey respondents said that they wanted a full-time job in retirement. Most older workers want a flexible work schedule, that is, part-time or cycles between periods of work and leisure. Many retirees schedule a career break to relax and recharge before taking on a new role, often in a different career field. The older workers largely report that their retirement jobs are more fun and flexible than their previous career. And I will tell you that working with our clients, certainly I see this on a daily basis where people are excited to retire, get out of the job that they've been at for a long period of time. They've just grown tired and weary of it. Maybe the responsibilities and lack of, gratification from the company causes them to say, you know what, I've had enough. I want to move out. And a lot of times they'll retire. A lot of times I see this identity crisis, particularly in men. Here in America, more than anywhere else around the world, identity becomes such a part of who you are because of your job. And so basically they'll retire. It takes a while to get adjusted to that. And then, of course, because of longevity of life, they find they don't want to just sit around, watch TV, get bored, die off. They want to get engaged again. And so they do find some sort of type of job to get engaged in, be it a paying job, nonprofit, whatever it is. But they usually find something that they really enjoy doing. And they don't normally work full time. Some do. I have clients working well into their 80s, some of them, because they just enjoy what they're doing. And if you enjoy what you're doing, it's not work. So, each of us is different. Each of us has our own game plan, but certainly something to think about. And it's always nice to know what other people are doing and thinking. So like to share these with you from time to time. And as we wrap up the show, certainly there's been some good moments here out in the markets lately. I think that they're welcomed and they're well-deserved. And certainly it's nice to be in these types of periods. Always nice to see your account values going up. Always nice to know that we're not worried about a crash right around the corner. Nice to see that a lot of countries and a lot of markets around the world are experiencing an uptrend here, and certainly enjoy it. Things don't last forever, like we mentioned before. Just like when we had the bad times, they don't last forever. Good times don't last forever. Everything changes. Just like I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, the market's more or less like it's like a person breathing. It has its ups and its downs. But certainly we've seen that the markets tend to, over time, always go up. They have since the dawn of time, so to speak, and certainly they continue. So enjoy it and make a little money. And with that, another show has come to an end. It's been a great pleasure to share the past hour with you. We always welcome the opportunity at Capital Financial Group to work with you as your personal financial advisor. Let us help you to eliminate the worry that comes with retirement planning and portfolio design and where incomes are going to come from and how your heirs are going to get your money and how do you avoid taxes and how do you get growth and what sector should you be invested in. Financial planning, moving 401ks, 403s, IRAs, and the like. That's what we can help our clients with. Give us a call. Our number is 330-668-6991. That's 330-668-6991. Thanks so much for having us in today, and we'll see you next Saturday at 7 right here at Money Talks. Have a great week.
Has been Money Talks with Richard Peterson, President of Capital Financial Group. This program is informational only and should not replace a financial consultation before investing your money. Registered financial advisors are key toward a balanced and responsible financial policy. This has been a paid program. 1590 WAKR and its parent company, the Rubber City Radio Group, are not responsible for its content.